This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Power Lunch on Power 98.7. It's a Tuesday. It's time to talk about all things tech.
Tech Tuesday.
So we're halfway through the year and there have been so many developments happening in the car industry. More cars from China have been introduced. We had a whole segment about Chinese vehicles here on Power Lunch. Some brands have had issues with their cars catching on fire or breaking down on the roads, the tech not working and communicating with the drivers. There have also been exciting new high-tech features introduced by popular car brands, and it's really been fun to watch. Remarkable year so far. There is lots more that we can look forward to. So in addition to the challenges and introductions, there have also been remarkable advancements in automotive technology this year. Many popular car brands have introduced cutting-edge features aimed at enhancing safety, enhancing comfort and connectivity for drivers and passengers alike. So we're going to get into it right now with automotive reviewers, Rebanilwe Simakane and Kumbirai Mjagazi, who are on the line with us. Reba, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Hello, thank you for having me. What an honor.
Lovely to talk to you. And Kumbi, hello, nice to talk to you again. Okay, so maybe we start with you, Reba. What stood out for you in the 2024 automotive industry so far?
What stood out for me is the mass introduction of more small cars. We are just getting into the crossovers and small SUVs and budget cars, the like, and it just goes to show where the economy is going and where manufacturers' priorities lie right now, that smaller the better. Everyone is just trying to make sure that they get their next cash cow in terms of cars that are sub 400,000 rand. So it's very interesting to see where the times are going, especially with the rise of Chinese manufacturers coming in with very competitive pricing. All the other challenger brands and more established brands are now a little bit frustrated as to what they need to do. And I think the crossover segment is just booming and the small SUV segment is just it's growing by leaps and bounds.
Very interesting. Kumbirai, you have the same question to you. What's excited you or has been of interest so far in this year?
Yeah, I think I definitely have to echo on what Reba has said. There's been obviously a lot of cars being introduced, but I think it doesn't look like, you know, the Chinese effect is not dying anytime soon. I mean, we have seen the likes of now GWM also introducing another model and just trying to, and also Chery or Moda also introducing another, you know, trim of their car. So they're just really trying to make sure they're targeting, you know, the audience that's, you know, struggling to pay 500,000 rand or 400,000 rand over for cars. So I think they're really targeting that space and they are not going to stop anytime soon because cars have just become extremely expensive now. And I think they're taking advantage of that. And you know what? That's something that keeps on standing out for me. As much as other brands are really still trying to, you know, reignite the passion in, you know, certain cars, but I think the Chinese has really, really came in with a big, big bang now.
I mean, you say 400 or 500,000 rand, and in the past that could get you quite a high-end car. I mean, we're dealing with something that is really outrageous. Talk to me about some of the economic influences that are making cars just so damn expensive, Kumbi.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, with cars also being imported, it's not looking good for especially those that are being imported, especially the likes of the German brands, the American brands and so forth. They are struggling a lot. You look at a typical example of, you know, the likes of a 3 Series C-Class, and back then there used to be also an A4. But right now the A4 is struggling to even meet that demand, and there isn't, you know, anything to compete with 3 Series and the C-Class now because, I mean, the cars have just became so expensive now. You know, you're looking at over a million rand for either a C-Class or a 3 Series, and that's really something that people cannot attain for. Let me just even leave the 3 Series alone. A 1 Series, you know, or an A-Class, which is, you know, something that's an entry level into those, you know, German cars. And those are easily starting over 700,000 rand now, just a starting price when you're just getting a base shell of the
car. Imagine.
And the Chinese coming in with, you know, everything for that 700,000 rand, an SUV for that price. So it's quite tricky for those. And I mean, everybody's struggling at the moment financially, you know. So it's tricky. And this is why also the secondhand market is booming so much right now.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit, before we get into the secondhand market, because that's going to be interesting to compare and contrast from a tech point of view. So what is available in the new vehicles tech-wise versus, you know, what people are even willing to not have in their vehicles due to financial constraints. So Reba, let's talk about tech, latest tech advancements in cars that have taken your breath away. Does anything even take your breath away anymore? I wonder.
You know, you're so good stuff. There is a sort of stuff that you drive all these different cars. I mean, when you jump into plug-in hybrids, self-charging hybrids, yeah, electric vehicles, you know, learning about regenerative braking and stuff like that. Heads-up display, these lane keep assist, you know. Back then, cars were just you, the gearbox, the engine, and your maker. Now they just... They make sure that if you stray, it puts you back into place. You know, there's like, it's very foolproof now. And it's just insane when you just jump into a car and everything just goes off when you brake. There's hazard. It's just like, it's a whole party in these vehicles.
Yeah.
To see. But the most, the one that stands out for me a lot is especially with the new form modes of transport that we're getting in terms of our electric cars, your plug-in hybrids and your self-charging hybrids.
What would you say in the South African market we actually need in terms of the tech? I'll give you an example. Like, do you think that it is vitally important for us to have that self-braking situation? Because, you know, a taxi may swerve in front of you at any time and the car's more aware possibly than you are. You know, that kind of thing. What do you think in South Africa we should almost eventually get to a point where that's a non-negotiable of tech in our cars?
Blind spot monitors. People don't check their blind spots.
Oh, yes.
Ram into each other, guys. There's millions of collisions that happen. It's just the most basic form of K53. So I think all of us, as standard, you just need something like a blind spot monitor and things like that. Because, yeah, even with the self-braking, it is necessary. But sometimes as this tech is just man-made, so human input is much needed.
Yes.
So sometimes it just eludes you, and then you think you're reliant on the self-braking, and then there's impact.
Kumbi?
Yes. One.
What were you saying? Sorry, finish your point.
Oh, I think the most basic one would be a blind spot monitor.
I think that that's incredibly important because very often people will be changing lanes and they're changing lanes into you. And you're like, but I am here. So absolutely. Kumbi, same question. South African market, tech that we absolutely need in our vehicles.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Reba. Blind spot monitoring, definitely. And I actually have to add, for me, you know, I used to think that autonomous emergency braking, which is that, you know, that anti-brake, when you don't notice anything doesn't work, but it actually saved me. And I don't think I'd be on the phone with you right now or the audience listening to me because a literal guy just came out of nowhere and I didn't notice him and the car did its thing. And I think, had I been in another car that didn't have that function, it would have been a different story.
Wow.
So I think that feature for me, and, you know, I used to think, but no, really, you don't really have to option, you know, an autonomous emergency braking. And I think right now, those are things that we really need. And when you look at it, it's the likes of the Chinese cars that are bringing these things at standard. So you get, obviously, blind spot assist, you've got autonomous emergency braking, you've got, you know, lane keep assist and all these things. But I think for me, autonomous emergency braking is something that that I definitely now look forward to having in a vehicle, especially that almost oopsie that I had. I think even when you're reversing out of your garage, imagine you're coming, pulling in or pulling out of your garage, and you don't realize that your child is behind, and you know it will stop immediately because it noticed something. Because sometimes we don't notice everything on the cameras or like, you know, all these things. So I think that feature for me needs to now, you know, pull out into more of these cars, even from your standard cars, your affordable cars to obviously your top of the range cars. I think that needs to be now a standard feature across.
I think that that makes so much sense. And it'll always remind me of an episode of Oprah where this woman driving an SUV didn't see her toddler behind the wheel of her SUV and drove over her toddler. And as a person who's in SUVs, like, that's always been my greatest nightmare. So I love that so much. Anything that can keep us safe, Kumbarai, that makes a lot of sense. All right, so let's talk then about what's available in the Chinese car market. It is very exciting for the fact that it is competitively priced, but then all of the stuff comes standard. Would you say, Reba, that, you know, the German cars and the American cars are falling behind because all of the stuff that the Chinese models are bringing in, you need to pay as an extra on top of that 700,000 rand that we were talking about earlier on?
Yeah, I think the German and the American brands will not fall. They will not go back on their stance. They will definitely charge you guys extra for anything and everything. The most basic of parking assist and stuff like that is an added 50,000 rand extra. Cameras or 30,000 rand extras on the German counterparts and whatever. And you come into marquees such as Jaeku, Omoda, Chery, Haval. Those things are standard. I don't think you even spec anything when you go to the dealership. I think you just choose a color and you drive out.
Wow.
Because there's very little that you can omit to their vehicles. That's how comprehensively spec'd they are. So I think it's going to be a challenge for the German brands. And we've noticed that once they start releasing vehicles, the Germans, the Koreans, the Japanese, and the Americans, and we always bring up the question, where does the Chinese fall into this car? Is your pricing up to standard with them? Is your spec up to standard with them? And you can see that their faces get a little bit sour, but you can't deny the fact that the Chinese are here and we're going to have to embrace them. But I really do think that all the other brands should now kind of make an effort to make their cars more comprehensively spec'd, try to make sure that their prices are justified so that if I walk into a dealership of a German manufacturer and I'm paying 1 million rand, I think the only thing I need to spec is just something, things that are just subjective to me, things that I like. But all the other things should be standard.
I mean, this, I wonder how are they able to do it? How are they able to be so competitively priced, Reba?
I mean, I'm not really too sure how they get it right, but most of their production is there. It's a lot of in-house things. They basically are kind of like the monopoly when it comes to manufacturing and tech, because they also supply parts to the German manufacturers and stuff like that. For them, it's much cheaper to produce vehicles that side, you know. And I think it would be great for them to also open up shop here. Well, that's my opinion. It would be great for them to open up shop here because it will also improve employment opportunities and probably maybe lessen the prices also, because even with the brands that are being produced here, they're still expensive.
Yeah.
You'd expect that local production will decrease the prices, but year in and year out, all the plants that we see, all the cars that they roll out, there's huge amounts of money pumped into these plants, but the pricing of the products that come from the production line is still very exorbitant. Mm-hmm. So I think that we have the monopoly in terms of manufacturing at the point, and I don't think it will be an easy feat to kind of topple them.
Kumbi, same question.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting there. I mean, I think Reba reached some amazing points.
Yes.
It's tough for those German brands. And I think it's more so the German brands that are, you know, feeling it so much, especially in the country and with what's happening. I mean, you look at the likes of Audi and how they are struggling to move, you know, just their performance models. Or even just they're not regular A1s or, you know, A4s, like I mentioned earlier on. And obviously this is because of the pressure that they're getting from, as much as every, you know, it's a global thing that Audi is going through currently. But I think the smaller countries, you know, like us and, you know, the rest of Africa will definitely feel that. And I mean, these dealerships are closing in South Africa. So it's worrying. And at the same time, that's where you see the likes of the Chery and Haval. I mean, everybody will attest to this, that everywhere you go, you'll see a Chery dealership or a Haval dealership.
Mm-hmm. Because starting to see Jaekus everywhere.
Correct. Jaeku too. And, you know, there's now a new, they're also attacking the Bucky space now. You've got the likes of LDV coming in also now, obviously, to try and eat at that space. I mean, we saw JAC as well, so coming into the market. And, you know, they've been really pushing, you know, to make sure that whatever you guys are looking for in that high end, we'll give it to you. And, you know, at a lower price. And I mean, everybody right now is looking at their pockets to say, listen, I want a car, but do I really need to be spending 700,000 rand for a base shell spec where I can get for that 700,000 rand, everything made. And like Reba mentioned, obviously, the Chinese are really good in terms of, you know, the tech, everything that they do in-house. They've got, I mean, they're leading in terms of vehicle supply and all that in the world. You look at the likes of even now in electric, the BYD brand, that's the biggest manufacturer of vehicles in, you know, in the world. And now they've brought, came into South Africa and opened a few dealerships as well. So it's going to be very interesting. And when you look also at the stance, you know, the government stance in terms of the entire BRICS situation going on. So they're going to get a lot of support from the government. So it's just going to make it increasingly difficult for the likes of the German brands or the other brands that are in the country. I do know that, you know, the Ford and Toyota have a stronghold in South Africa because they've got plants here and all that stuff. But for the rest, I do see them struggling going forward.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about parts, right? So if you're in one of these Chinese brands, how easy is it to get repairs and parts, Reba?
Look, that is a very tricky one because I think that from what I've seen in terms of engagement with people that I follow and people that on the daily, it is a bit of uncharted territory. They were complaining that some of their Chinese vehicles are sitting for months and on end without any, you know, without to no avail. But I think that it will get better with time because some of these brands left the country and came back, so probably they're still trying to make sure there's parts distribution centers to make sure that the demand of the vehicles meets the demand of the parts, you know. And I think you can all come back into a market. You're always having high hopes of your product. You're thinking that it's foolproof, nothing will go wrong. So I think parts just a little bit later, it's something that will probably get fixed. But with the people that I've spoken to, regular customers that we speak to on a daily, a lot of them are not struggling as much, but there has been some conversation that parts distribution is a little bit poor on the Chinese side.
Yeah, and you know what frightens me is a car would be tires, mirrors, carburetor, gearbox, you know, that kind of thing that we're used to. But now, if there's no chip, the specific chip, then your whole car can't function. Everything is like to spec almost, you know, in terms of the body, but there's one tech chip, then you're stuck.
That is probably one of the problems with very tech-heavy vehicles.
Yes.
Because one thing breaks, all things break. So I think a lot of manufacturers now are kind of going a bit of more old school route. I always take Honda as an example. They're not very tech heavy as most of their competitors. Same with Toyota. The R&D is done. So they're kind of using parts that they've tried and tested over the years, which makes parts distribution much easier. So now when you're coming into the market with cars that are tech heavy, where you have sensors, cameras, everything is just electrically operated, your key. If your key doesn't function, the car doesn't open, then it's ripple effect. So I think that's where there's just a little bit of teething problems in terms of that. But I think it'll get better in due
time. Sure. You know, I keep thinking of, you know, if you keep your hotel key close to your cell phone or the parking ticket close to your cell phone and then you can't open the thing and it's so frustrating. I mean, if we're seeing things maybe not because of cell phones but that are that simple, Reba, to your point about the key not opening, I mean, what a frustration. We're talking in Tech Tuesday about the latest car updates. We've got our experts on the line, automotive reviewers Rebanilwe Simakane and Kumbirai Mchakazi, who are on the line with us. Your questions and comments always welcome on 0861 987 000. Okay, let's get into the nitties and gritties. Celebrating the 25th anniversary of the X5, BMW has unwrapped the Silver Anniversary Edition. It's a limited edition variant boasting an off-road package, and only 1,000 examples will be made. Who wants to tell me about that?
Reba, do you want to go?
I'm very shocked that they would do something like that, especially the fact that they have an off-road capability, because the X5 has always been a very luxury SUV. So it's a long time coming. I think they could have done this. They could have made it more robust years ago. So we'll see how it fares. I mean, 1,000 units makes it a special edition kind of vehicle, a very niche product. So we'll see who'll jump onto it. But to be honest, I would have loved for them to have capitalized on off-road capability years ago.
But who's buying these luxury SUVs for off-road capabilities? Just between you and me, who is that? Are we going on off-roading, or is the off-road the, you know, the driveway in our complexes, Reba?
I think, but there are products, luxury products that are off-road capable, such as your Range Rover and Land Rovers. So those ones cater to people that are a bit more adventurous, you know, things like that. Nowadays, a lot of the SUVs are coming in with a lot of capability, your Fortuners, your Prados, your new Everest, even though they're so fancy and used for the city driving and highway driving, they are built for purpose so that when you go off the beaten path on a weekend or you do some heavy off-roading, the car will be able to take a beating, but it will be able to take a beating in style.
I love that, take a beating in style. All right, so from that, you know, from the off-roading point of view, is there tech involved in, you know, what you can and cannot do off-road?
Partially. Could you take this one, please?
I mean, not necessarily. Hey. So tech is actually heavily involved in this because if you think about it right now, you know, back in the Puha days, back in the days, you know, you'd need to essentially get to an off-road trail and then you'd literally get out of your car to set it off-road, you know, make sure it's in the right off-road mode, etc. But right now, you can just do the switch of a button inside your car. And this is what's happening essentially. I mean, they've put in off-road focused driving modes where if you're on sand, easily switch into sand, gravel or rocks. So that is quite cool. I mean, also the fact that you can, it will automatically just adjust the ride height according to, you know, your throttle response and where you are. That is, there's definitely some tech involved in there. And I think, you know, with BMW making these cars, you know, I'm sure there's been a, and it's unfortunately not going to be any models in South Africa, but I think there's been such a craving in terms of, you know, the Jeep market in America, because all these units are destined for the US market. And we see what the Jeeps in America do and how all those guys who drive all those Jeeps just want to be, you know, going off-roading. So I think there were some BMW drivers who had that appetite, essentially. So right now, it's, you know, it's bragging status. I've got one of 1,000 cars in that BMW has ever made, and it can go off-road. You know, it's got all these gold-plated things and all that stuff. So I think they really, for me, I think it's quite cool. It's such a pity that they wouldn't bring a few units to South Africa as when they know that, you know, South Africa is such an SUV frenzy market and, you know, we love our off-roading. I mean, Bucky SUV frenzy market. So,
and we love that brand as well. It's correct. So synonymous with a lot of South African pop culture. Very interesting. All right, let's take a short break and find out what's happening in the very latest power headlines. We're still talking about all things tech, but this time from a motoring point of view, some of the latest tech in vehicles that are coming up. I'd love you to join in and let me know about what's exciting you in your vehicle or what it is that you have seen and are looking forward to. Let's talk to our automotive reviewers, Reba and Kumbi, after this, your 2 o'clock power headlines.
Speak up. Call the power line on 0861-987-000.
Yes, indeed. That is the number to dial. Let's talk about it. All things cars, all things tech in vehicles. And so far, we've spoken about some of the interesting stuff when it comes to electric vehicles, but we are going to delve into that a bit more. And then specifics of the specific vehicles that are coming out or have come out with interesting tech within them and things to expect as 2024 continues. All right. Reba and Kumbi are our automotive reviewers as we move on to a brand that we've spoken about in this conversation, but that iconic Audi R8 sports car. Now, that was halted in March 2024. What a one. I mean, this is a performance powerhouse. It is sexy to look at. I've driven one around the Kyalami track. It's just incredible. Supercar, V10 races, flagship. I mean, it's really quite cool. So what happened?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Reba.
Well, Audi is going the more electrified route. So their vehicles are being discontinued quite a bit. There's also been conversations that the A1 is being axed and the Audi Q2 is being axed. So it's no surprise that something as brute as a V10 is also on the chopping block and now it's been halted in terms of production. So the people that have them right now should really hang on to them until the wheels fall off. Luckily, there is still some RS models in the play. You know, you still have your RS3, RS6s, RS7s, and your RS4s and RS5s. So I think that will soften the blow a bit for very, very staunch petrol heads.
Why should they hang on to them, Reba?
I mean, it's a V10. Why wouldn't you hang on to a V10? I would keep it forever and ever. I think you can even bury me with it. I mean, it's an R8.
A real petrol head. But what happens when a vehicle is discontinued? Because I'm seeing a lot of vehicles being discontinued in our market, right? So some that I've heard of, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, and you can add on as well. Kia Rios, I've heard certain Nissan brands are being discontinued. Even the MP200, I heard that or read that somewhere. So what happens if you have that vehicle and then they're no longer importing them to South Africa, or the brand itself is discontinuing it? What's going to happen overall to your after sales service, Kumbi?
So nothing will essentially happen to you to that, because as long as the manufacturer is still in the country, you will still be, you know, your car is still being able to be serviced, and you know, there's still a greater, longer plan for that. You won't necessarily have to worry. In fact, there is no need for you to worry at all, because they still know that, you know, they still have an audience or market of people who had bought these cars that are still, you know, driving them. So there is no need for you to worry at all. And I mean, just to touch back, you know, on that Audi R8 in terms of, you know, discontinuation, you know, and I think we mentioned it earlier on, that they are just not currently doing well. And also the commitment to focus on EV so much is also not helping them. But interestingly enough, the R8 was, you know, the lowest selling product from Audi. So
because it's a squillion dollars.
That is true. A baby Lamborghini, basically. So that wasn't making money. But I mean, like Reba said, if you've got that currently, that's going to triple in price in the future, considering how everybody's going electric now. So having a V10 in the next 20 years, everybody's going to want their hand on that, because, you know, it's going to be so quiet in the world. But yeah, there's no need to worry in terms of, you know, so you currently have an R8 at the moment, and, you know, they've discontinued it. They still make, you know, plans to make sure that your car can still be serviced. Obviously, there's still Audi dealerships and qualified technicians who work in-house, those brands, whether it's, you know, Nissan discontinued the MP200 or the Qashqai or the, you know, X-Trail, etc. There's still, you know, plans for all those cars. So I do think that people shouldn't really panic. I mean, it is sad to see the likes of those cars, you know, being discontinued. And I think it just shows you the reality of the pressure that's being applied by all these other brands, and obviously people and the financial status of, you know, various people all across the world, to be honest with you.
All right. Let's speak to Nomgabelo, who's on the line. Hi, Nomgabelo.
Hi, Bobby. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I've got the car experts on the line with us. What's on your mind?
Okay. For now, I am driving a Hyundai Tucson.
Yes.
And it's a 2-liter. I love it. It has a sport capability. But then, given a chance, I've heard of the Beijing and whatnot and whatnot. But if I were to be given a chance to buy another car, I would buy still the same car, but an N-Series, you know, the Scott one, the very fast one. Yeah. So I love. And the other thing is, one thing that I've noticed with our, I think this is a Korean car, is that whenever, like, I had an accident with a vehicle I drove before, it was a Creta, it took forever to be fixed. Like, it took them like 8 months because they were waiting for parts.
What?
It was a new, it was a new vehicle, and this and that and that one too. So yes, they are here, they are beautiful, but then should you have an accident, something that you have not planned, then you might have issues of not getting your car as quick as you would have maybe got in your VW or your Toyota.
Sure.
I love it.
You love it. Okay, that's beautiful. That's very good to know. And anybody who's listened to this show before, I really love that brand. One of my first cars was a Getz, and it's just such a great brand. Let's hear from our experts. Nomgabelo is obsessed and loves a Hyundai Tucson, but if she were to get a new one, she'd stay in the Tucson but get an N-Series. Reba, your thoughts?
I think it's a great car. I drove the Tucson inline. It is a bit pricey now. You're looking at around 800,000 rand.
For a Hyundai?
Yes. You're looking at just for a Hyundai Tucson. But that 2.2 turbo diesel is an absolute peach. It's a stunning car, very beautiful family car, very futuristic looks and whatever. But I think she should keep that Tucson until the wheels fall off, even on the secondhand market. And even when she spoke about her accident, this was in the They were still new, they were still teething issues, just like the Chinese are experiencing right now. So with these brands being challenger brands and them being so established right now, pods distribution must be healthier. So I do recommend that keep that tooth on for as long as you can, and then probably wait for the newer one to get onto the secondhand market, because brand new, you are looking at around 800,000.
How's the tech in those cars?
It's phenomenal, man. I mean, I think Hyundai's tech is actually just very, very good. They don't overdo it. I think that's what I enjoy about Kia and Hyundai. They really don't overdo it with tech. They just add things that are necessary to the customer at the time. Very, very good safety features, very comprehensive spec. The pricing has now gone up, because when you look back then, Hyundai and Kia used to come in as budget vehicles.
Yes.
They used to be where Chery was, and now they've transcended, and now they've marketed themselves as a premium brand. But I think they products are stellar for me.
I mean, when I hear those numbers, I can't believe it. But anyway, that's where we are, right? That's what's going on. With that in mind, then, I wonder, somebody who's entering the car market, first-time buyer, first-time car kumbi, what do you recommend, since everything is the price that it is?
Yeah, everything is just expensive right now. But I think the brand that can really cater for, you know, that first-time buyer right now is the Suzuki brand. And we notice how they are so great in terms of, you know, their products, and also now, they've essentially, you know, put the fight up to VW. At one stage, they were, you know, the second most selling brand in South Africa, just below Toyota. So I think as a first-time buyer, you cannot go wrong with the Suzuki brand. They've got some great offerings. They are reliable. The engines can last you forever. And, you know, it's, you know, this essentially, back in the days, we used to say, when I get a job, I'm going to get myself a Polo. But right now, a Polo is $500,000. So essentially, what you need is a Suzuki, and Suzuki is, you know, starting at 200,000 rand, even less than 200,000 rand, you know, Celeria, which is a great car. You get to a Suzuki Swift, which is right now going head-to-head with the Polo Vivo, and I think it's doing quite great. So I can always recommend Suzuki to a lot of people. Their, you know, their models are great. But, I mean, you know, you cannot just forget also about the Polo. If you do have that money right up there, and I do think that, you know, they do make great cars. You know, they're all over, and the parts obviously are all over. So you can also still get yourself a Polo Vivo. But, yeah, you can never go wrong. For a first-time buyer, get a Suzuki.
All right. The number to dial is 0861-987-000. We're talking all things cars and tech. We've got Reba and Kumbi, who are our automotive reviewers, who are on the line with us, just waiting for your call. So I don't know this, but Fano, our producer here on Powerline, tells me that there's a specific thing that's happening with Chery Tiggo cars and drivers, right? So apparently the Chery Tiggo 7 Pro hazard lights go on. They flash when you drive too close to it. And so drivers have been, like drivers of other cars, have been driving too close to Chery Tiggos to trigger those hazard lights going on. They think it's a fun game, but it's totally annoying for Chery owners. Do you know about this?
Yeah. So essentially, this is it's a anti-collision warning, actually. So it's meant to actually help the driver that is. So, you know, when you are driving in traffic and suddenly there's a standstill, and you have to physically put on the hazard light so that the driver behind you doesn't come, you know, hitting into you. So Chery has incorporated that into their car so that whenever it senses a car that's close to you, it'll put on those hazard lights. But, you know, and it's been quite hilarious, obviously, with the video that's been going around. And I do know that owners are getting frustrated, but you can actually switch that feature off. And I think that this is some education that needs to happen, you know, when people collect their Cherries, or, you know, from Chery itself, you know, maybe putting out some sort of campaign to say, listen, you can actually switch this off. But I think I wouldn't advise with switching it off, because I think it's a safety feature that which will come in handy one day, because, I mean, you'll switch it off and then you forget, and, you know, somebody will come smashing right into you. So it is quite funny to look at, but I think it's a nifty feature that will come in handy one day.
So let me get this straight. We are playing games on the road in our cars with each other, and that's okay. Is that not a safety hazard, guys?
That is definitely a safety hazard. And I mean, we've seen a lot of videos of people where they just want to try and do this. And I would advise 100% going against this. And like I also mentioned, I think the Chery owners should not be frustrated and or switch it off because obviously it's meant to save you should something happen. But yeah, people are kind of finding that amusing somewhat when they drive, when they see a Chery vehicle, because all Cherys do that essentially. So I think, you know, they need to stop with the fun and games. But it's a cool, quirky, fun feature from Chery, which I quite adore. I won't lie to you.
Yeah, from a safety point of view, that's a very smart move. All right, so now let's move into EVs, shall we? Grid Cars, who is South Africa's biggest car charging company. Now, they've entered into an agreement. Is it Shenzhen InfiPower? So that they can supply and install electric vehicle charging infrastructure in South Africa. Can you tell us more about this?
I am super excited about this. I have always stressed the fact that we need more infrastructure and charging infrastructure in South Africa.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we, with Grid Cars currently now, the biggest, obviously, charging company in South Africa entering this agreement, I think it's going to help so many EV owners. And I mean, even us as reviewers when we do review cars, because, you know, it's most of these EV platforms, charging stations, have not been put in, you know, across the border of South Africa. So you do get them on the N1s, N3s, etc. But I mean, I always stress the fact that, you know, I do most of my commute from Gauteng to Mafikeng. And the last one is literally in Rustenburg, which is about 200 Ks away from Mafikeng, which is an issue for me, because if I've got an EV, then what do I do? So obviously with this now, it means that we're going to get more charging stations, more infrastructure all over South Africa. And I mean, Shenzhen InfiPower is also a massive in terms of supplying EV infrastructure and products to a lot of globally, essentially. So I think this is really exciting. I think they should just really do it as soon as possible, because there is an influx of EVs that are being bought. I mean, you look at the current state of EVs in South Africa, where Volvo is leading the charge, you know, with their sub-million EX30, and we've seen this all over the road. So I think it's going to be a relief to owners. And, you know, they're not just bringing, you know, public infrastructures, but they'll also be bringing also AC home chargers, obviously, which will make your charging at home quite quicker, as opposed to, you know, just plugging into your wall where it takes, you know, 12 hours or 8 hours, etc. So I think it's great news from everybody. I just want to see how the public infrastructure charging will then cost, because we do, it is quite expensive currently in terms of charging publicly. I think it is interesting and welcome news.
Take us through that. I'm not 100% sure if I've ever asked how the process of charging at a public stop actually works. Where do you pay? How do you pay? How long do you have to sit around and wait to be charged up, Kumbi?
Yeah, so essentially, it all depends on your car and how, you know, how big the battery is. Essentially, like, you know, like your fuel tank.
Yeah.
You'll have if you have a bigger battery, it will obviously take you slightly longer to charge. But then this is where we've got the likes of the 200 kilowatt DC fast charger, which is located at Mall of Africa. And with that charger, you can literally charge, you know, I'm going to make an example of a GWM Aura, which has got about a 64 kilowatt hour battery, and it can charge in 30 minutes from zero to obviously 80%. So it's just, you know, you get into the mall and you will be allocated a card from Grid Cars, where you register your vehicle, and obviously you're able to load money onto that card. Once you get onto the charging station, then you tap your card and, you know, you plug in your car, and essentially that's how the money is deducted off your card. So that's how you pay for the charge.
Okay.
But that charge is usually about 5 rand, or I'm not stand to be correct, about 5.88 a kilowatt hour. So that tends to be expensive, because I mean, if you look at our local, you know, electricity rates, you know, it is quite less than that. I think it's about maybe 2 rand something. I also stand to be corrected there. So they do, you know, hike up the price quite much, where that is why they advise, you know, charge at home, because obviously you pay less when you charge at home. But I think this coming now into the market, I do hope that, you know, they are slightly cheaper rates, and that, you know, they do bring in also extra fast chargers. I think we only have a few fast chargers, DC chargers in South Africa, so it should be interesting.
Let's speak to Sillo, who's on the line in Pretoria. Hi, Butsillo.
Hello, my dear.
How are you?
I'm good. Look, man, I just want to find out from the guy, ne?
Sure.
Toyota Fortuner. Look, it's a luxury car. But when you read on the news or on TV, And even this Saturday, Sunday, we were at church, and then when we went out, this car was stolen. What makes it so easy to get inside of this car? Why is it so easy to steal this Fortuna? That's what I wanted to find out. Is it the security of it really in good shape, or what is it that really makes it so easier? The guy is in his church, and then when you get out, the guy is gone.
I think that's such a fantastic question. Yeah.
Fortuna, it's a luxury car. It's a luxury car.
Okay, thank you very much, Silla. So what is it with the Fortuna? We know it's high on the hijack list as well. Why is it so easy to even steal when it's standing there outside Silla's church?
I'm not too sure, to be honest, as to how easy it is, but I think that criminals have cracked the code. I don't think there is a car that's purposely built to be easy to break into. Toyota has probably put measures in place to make sure that these cars are foolproof and theft-proof, I think, as with all manufacturers. But I think that criminals are just one step ahead. And it's not just indigenous to the Fortuna. Many other vehicles, I mean, there was reports of a Bajaj being stolen at standstill. So I think that the crime rate is just not even just synonymous with Toyota and the Fortuna and the Hilux and whatever. I think it's just the whole nationwide problem where all cars are being affected. But to be quite honest, I think the manufacturers do their utmost best to make sure that these cars are safe proof, but criminals are just one step ahead.
Did they put the Bajaj in someone's handbag and then just run away? All right. So.
Oh, wow.
But you know, we laugh, but that's outrageous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is outrageous. I think just to add on to what Riva is saying, I think if I can just mention this to Brazil, is that wherever there's a demand, there is almost likely going to be crime. And we do realize that a lot of people love the engine that's in their Toyota because it's repurposable to a lot of things. So that's the other thing. And, you know, they steal them for parts. You know, it's not like they're stealing them and, you know, they just, at the end of the day, they change VIN numbers and someone else is driving it. They're mostly stealing them for parts. We've noticed this with the Volkswagen Golfs, Polo GTIs, etc., because there's so many of them. Somebody out there, you know, is missing parts and doesn't want to go the right route in terms of buying parts,
for
and they
sure.
end up stealing them. So that is the biggest problem that we have. And I mean, Toyota has addressed, Toyota and I mean, Ford as well, in terms of their ranges, they've addressed that. Listen, we're putting the greatest of, you know, security systems into these cars. But I think people are just, I always say that if there's anybody who is smart in the world, it's a criminal. And if they could just bring that knowledge, you know, into a good way, it would be so great as a country. But,
I wanted to, and I think this is a good place to wrap it up in terms of technology and safety features, right? So we know, as you so rightly said, anytime there's a new safety feature, the criminals become wise to it and are like a couple of steps ahead, right? So are there different things that the vehicle manufacturers are putting into these new vehicles that are safety features that have caught your attention, Reba?
Not entirely, because I think, as Kumbi did say, a lot of these manufacturers have kind of expressed that they have put all the measures in place. I mean, a lot of the manufacturers have apps where you can lock the car on your phone and ensure that the phone is locked from your device, you know. I think the one thing that a lot of consumers are worried about is this new keyless entry thing that has become the norm, because when you lock the car and walk away, because it's just a signal, anyone can jam it. So that has been something that a lot of consumers have been worried about, and some are preferring to go back to conventional keys where you slot in and you just turn the ignition on, because that's a bit safer. But in terms of the new tech that has come into the vehicles, I'm really impressed. You know, heads-up displays, you don't have to look all the way onto your cluster anymore, your blind spot monitors, your lane keep assist, your parking aids when you're getting out of tight spots. You know, there's also self-parking, so you just put the car in position and just goes in. So a lot of less human input is coming into driving nowadays, which kind of takes the fun away from it. But I think that in terms of the tech with all the cars, all the manufacturers, everything that they're putting into these vehicles, also making it a lot safer for us, you know, with your Apple CarPlay and Android Autos, so that you don't have to be texting all the time. Everything just pops up on the screen. And it really is, it's really great to see how much cars have advanced over the years.
Absolutely. And Kumbi, also the safety question, but also from a safety against criminals question. Kumbi, are you there?
Yeah. Sorry. I know Reba mentioned essentially, you know, you can now look at your phone. They've got apps now. I know Ford has an app, essentially. Mercedes has an app. So does BMW, you know, where you can essentially just, you know, check if your car is locked. It will essentially alert you even, you know, when you've, you know, unopened one door or when your car is started. So I think those are things that, you know, it's not only just the vehicle thing, but I think the entire ecosystem within the OEMs are making sure, from your software developers to everybody within IT security, they're making sure that, you know, at least make sure that you know where your car is at all times. And I mean, just, you know, you being able to check how far your fuel is, or, you know, let me start up my car at this time. Every morning I'll set an alarm to the car, essentially, where it will start up every morning at 5:30 in the morning and just heat up. So that those are things that, you know, all these manufacturers are putting in, which I do quite appreciate. But I think in terms of security, I do really love the fact that you're able to essentially just look at your car wherever you are, whether you are in, you know, 1,000 kilometers away from your car, but you can see who has unlocked your car. Is your car on? You can switch off your car from your app as well now. So these are things that I appreciated. Wow. And well welcome, essentially, in terms of security.
But then if they steal your phone...
then it does raise that concern if they steal your phone. But I mean, if they do steal your phone, you're easily able to, you know, just log into a computer. And
from where, Kumbi? They've got your phone and your car. Where are you going? You know, I think we have to laugh because it's actually outrageous and ridiculous, isn't it? And here we are in a world where we have the most extraordinary technology, in the most extraordinary country, these roads we can drive on, our scenery, like it's amazing, right? And then we have to deal with this other aspect that's just such a brick in the face of all of the advancements in technology. But I have loved this conversation. So much to think about and so many really incredible advancements in technology. Where can we find your automotive writing, Reba?
You can find me, I'm more YouTube-based, so you can find me on YouTube at Reba S Cars. And in terms of the website, I do have one. You can check me out at www.ribas.co.za.
Nice. And Kumbi, where can we find your work?
So you can find my work at www.kumbim.com or kumbirim on all social media platforms.
Fantastic. Reba and Kumbi, thank you very much for joining us. This was a wonderful conversation about some of the latest car updates in our Tech Tuesday. Have a wonderful rest of your afternoon, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Wonderful. That was a lot of fun, man. I love it. I love cars. I love that they're coming into our country the way that they are. And it's always just this balancing act of what we can and want to do. And then on the other side, what is safe for us to do in our country. Man alive.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.